Rick Kettlehoon. Today's date is November 25, 1973. The time is 7 o'clock p.m. I will be interviewing Carl F. Kettlehoon, my grandfather of Saginaw, Michigan. Topics to be discussed are his father working in lumberyard and perhaps my grandfather working with the post office, etc. We'll just see how it goes.
Okay. Well, I can recall working at what was called the S.L. Eastman Flooring Company, the Hard Maple Flooring, and also at this Mershon Box Factory and the Sash and Door Company. But otherwise, I remember only the fire of the Bliss Mill in my early days. I used to take my dinner, or my father's dinner, over to the mill with my brother and watched it for seeing the mill was interesting, and but I didn't really, I wasn't old enough to work at that time, but I would rather perhaps, I did remember the fires too, of course, when the flooring company burned and Rashawn's place mostly burned. It seems that in those days there was an old saying that when the lumber ran out, the insurance company bought the factory, and so it would seem, but I would rather speak of experiences my dad quoted sitting around the old hard coal burner. He was inclined to be a storyteller, but there was no reason to doubt any of the things he told. But as he worked about 8 years in the lumber woods, the early pine days when the lumber was plentiful, but dad usually, he did not always haul logs. He did haul logs to some extent, but his usual job was to be called what they called a tote team. He drove to the nearest railroad and back each day with a load of hay and grains and so forth, and pork barrels full of pork for the employees. And he also would have sometimes a kind of a sad experience when men were badly injured in camp. It happened quite frequently when those that were skidding the logs would get a broken leg or the likes of that, perhaps a chain caught in the face. And then they would, the thing with the broken limbs, they would take a door off in the building and lay it on a sled. And then Dad would have the job of driving this party probably 16 miles to the nearest railroad station, where he would be transferred to the train and have to ride to Saginaw before he could get any real aid.
Where was he working?
The Bliss Lumber Company.
Well, where was it located?
Up around Edenville.
What was that?
Oh, he worked different places, but around Edenville in that neighborhood, which is all farms now.
Yeah.
Dad was offered this, the whole section of land up there one spring by Bliss. Those fellows, they were doing business on other people's money. They weren't rich. But they knew how to manipulate. But Dad was years getting all his pay from them people. But at this one time, they wanted to offer him a whole section of land up there for his winter's pay.
One payment?
Yeah. And Dad said, gosh, what do I want with all those acres of stumps? But in the later years, when we took him up to the Edenville, what did they call them, Edenville parties or affairs they had up there, and he said, drive me over to the other corner over here, will you? And he said, I'm kind of lost. And he stood on the corner and he looked around. He said, yeah, this is it. I could have had this whole section for one winter's pay, he said, but I wouldn't take it, because what would I do with it then? But now look at it, it was all sugar beet fields and grain fields and so forth. So are you running it now?
Yeah.
Also the usual thing, the boys, when they went to Lumberwood, the young men, they hunted for some, brought their own horses. And most generally, the horses belonged to the logging company. But they always tried to pick a camp where they felt they would have the best food, because the pay was always about the same, something like $1 a day. And they would try to find a cook camp, perhaps, that would have a woman and a chore boy to do the cooking, because sometimes the biscuits in other camps were so hard that they were thrown back at the cook during the breakfast period. And there were many experiences that Dad tells about. Some of them, that Saturday night dances, used to get, the men would dance between themselves, and they'd get so rough that they had to turn out all the lights on them to bed. And they had their hardships, but they worked from daylight till dark. In fact, one man drove a team all night on what they called a sprinkler. My one uncle worked that several winters. They would have a large wooden tank on a sled, and they'd have to go down to the creek or some water hole and fill this tank with water, and then they would drive over the roads and sprinkle them. They had a sprinkler attachment on there so that they would be icy so that the sleds would pull that much easier. They hauled at some tremendous weights.
Yeah.
And that was when my dad said that job, he would never take that cold ice water at nights. And so then there perhaps would be some other things. I know he told of horses that refused to work, and they had that really couldn't figure out whether the horse perhaps would be sick or just balky. And there was one particular man there, I can't remember the name correctly, was a nervous type of fellow. And he had one of these horses, and my dad came up on him one day. The horse was laying down in front of the sled, and this nervous man was chewing the horse's ear, trying to make him get up.
Horse's ear?
And these are a number of stories that Dad related back to the old hard coal burner. They were always interesting to boys. And in them days, our earliest days, we didn't even get a newspaper, so anything like a story was entertainment.
Yeah.
And there wasn't any radio or TV or any of that sort of thing. But there was a lot of popcorn on Sunday afternoons and jolly get-togethers, Saturday night parties with a keg of beer and a man on a table with an accordion for a pastime. And I think that we really enjoyed ourselves in those days. There wasn't a lot of worry and hurry like today.
Right.
We went at a slow pace. But everything, we as young men, we never forget that our folks at one time raised a certain type of goose. And no matter if we came home at midnight or 1 o'clock, we could never get in that door without the geese raising the racket. Mother always knew what time we came home. It didn't do any good to take your shoes off and walk in.
I've heard they're better than watchdogs.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you want anything more than that. If you got a question that I could probably answer.
Well,
Dad was born in Germany, and he came over here in 1860. And he was 13 years of age at that time, and the first job he had was a night job hauling shavings and sawdust to the fire room in that old Bliss mill. And he'd often told of how frightened he was at that age, driving a horse at night when we had quite a severe thunder and lightning storms in those days, and the horses would become so frightened. Dad had a wonderful opportunity that folks liked him, even if he couldn't talk English. He was a chore boy at Bliss's, took him at their home, this particular Bliss family, and wanted to send him to school. But he was too backward and bashful to start schooling. If he had, it might have stood him well in hand, but he managed to learn to read the newspapers and sign his name in English and never went to English school.
That's all he needed, then.
There was no law making you go to school.
Right.
And, he was a great conversationalist, my dad was. He could, in a half an hour, talking with anybody, a stranger, anyone he met, he could come home and tell you all about him. He had it all picked up.
Did he work there? I mean, that's how he started out working then.
Yeah.
When he came over.
Yeah.
And he worked there all?
Well, no, he worked different. Those places didn't last that long. See, the lumber woods run out, and the lumber was gone.
Yeah.
And then he was a great man with horses, so he drove horses around the mill. And he drove horse around Eastman's flooring mill, and that's how I got the job there. And then he after that, done some farming. But he never was very, he never liked farming very much, but he'd drive the horses. He always had a beautiful team that were never showed a blemish on an ankle or foot anywhere, and they were 30 years old. They had to have them put out of the way, but Dad took such good care of the horses and knew their weaknesses and their sicknesses, pretty near as good as a vet.
Yeah.
Lots of people would come to Dad when their horse was sick and want to know what to do for the horse. And then I can remember him burning sulfur. They put a bag over the horse's head, and he'd had what they called distemper. It would be like off a heavy nose drippings, you know. And he would burn this sulfur, I think it was, under the bag to make them inhale it. I can just remember him doing things like that.
That did the job, huh?
Well,
it worked.
They'd bring it out. When I had pneumonia, Dr. Sample treated me the same way with vinegar and water and a towel over your head. And then the water had to be real hot and steaming. And he broke up my pneumonia.
Yeah. So where did he learn that? Just picked it up?
Who?
Your dad.
Yeah, around the lumber camps and so forth. And he never once liked to see a horse going barefoot. That is, without regular shoes. Yeah. And then with a banged up hoofs. And some people did drive horses with miserable looking hoofs. They didn't have the money really to get them to the blacksmith shop and get them fixed. And money was very scarce.
Yeah.
And on the farmland, it wasn't so bad when they're in the soft land, but if they traveled on gravel roads, they could stones in their hoof, and then Dad would have to dig them out and doctor around with them. So there was all kinds of things that go with the early history. But seems that I used to like to hear him talk and about his experiences and so forth. And I always thought he was quite a fella for considering he had no education.
Yeah, I guess.
He got his little education enough to get confirmed in German, in Germany, herding geese.
Herding geese?
Yeah, they used to herd geese and sheep. The whole family had to work on what was called the Bauer's place. The Bauer had a big acre.
Oh, right.
And they also, over there, I remember telling Dad speaking about when they had these thunder and lightning storms, they all had to get up and get dressed completely, and they had to get the harness on the teams and had the barns and doors all open ready to go in case of fire.
Fire. Is that when they came in? We had some slide presentation, and they had a lot of barrels up above the...
Oh, on the mills?
Yeah.
They were all over the roofs.
Yeah.
Yeah, in case of a sudden fire, and they still didn't want it to burn down.
Right.
Pour some water on it.
I wonder how effective those would really be.
Well, if you saw it soon enough, it'd be all right. But if your fire ever gets started, in the shaving bin stage sometimes had fire. It didn't take long. Then I'd see that the shaving bin was, there was an overhead fan, a big fan which has a belt, a slider operating it off of the main shaft. You would see where the steam engine there had one main shaft, that was the power for the whole mill. And there was a day when Ryan Berenson, we were working at Eastman's, and we had to work 60 hours a week, and no time off, no such thing as vacations or sick time or anything. And we had we saw that belt going to pieces one morning. It was clipping, flipping, flipping. These belts were glued together with it. A real good glue, and they were cut on an angle, the leather was, and then they flapped that and glue it together. And we said, should we tell them? If we don't tell them, maybe we'll get a part of the day off. So we let the thing go. But we didn't tell anybody in person, you know, it went glum, you know, and they had to shut the mill down for the rest of the day. And take this belt over town somewhere to be cemented together again.
So you didn't get a day off?
Yeah, we got a part of the day off.
Yeah. Well, that was good. That was good.
One way to get it.
Yeah.
And then we'd work we work a full week, 10 minutes off in our noon hour every day, so that we could go home 1 hour early on Saturday night.
Well, that was decent.
Yeah, but we had made it up, 6 days, and 10 minutes off in your noon hour every day. And then we were working pretty hard. Heavy hardwood flooring was heavy.
Is that what you did?
That's when we worked at Eastman's Mill, the flooring mill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of sitting down at noon, as soon as we get through eating, there was huge sheds where the flooring was piled. And it was piled on steps. The men carried it up, constantly building it up, see? And then piled them down until they'd have a carload of order for a certain amount of it, and then they'd have to. Then they'd take it the other way again. We didn't even have rollers them days yet. They carried it off. And we'd run up and down them darn steps, you know, play hide and seek or something on our noon hour instead of sitting down to rest. Yeah, I mean, those are great days. Of course, if there wasn't anything about my experience in the post office would only go back, well, I went there in 1927. And that was a time then that they were still using some horses to haul the mail to the depot down on Potter Street and over on the West Genesee to the Michigan Central Depot. And trains came through all hours, night and day. And the point of it was that how much has changed. Today there isn't even a single train taking any mail out of Saginaw. Yeah. And it all goes by bus and in a roundabout ways, but it has there's no more hauling to the depots back and forth to the cities. The post office and unload and load. So that probably is an advantage, but it seems that the mail is slower than ever. But I don't know just how we would say that with all the new equipment, much of it isn't 100%. And if a letter gets on the wrong belt and it goes the wrong place, why then it's held up for a week or two at a time. But that isn't going to be every letter, but it takes a good head to just sit there and push buttons and send them letters in the right direction.
Yeah. What Dad was saying, that the post office, as soon as you got there, they were telling you stories. Going on.
Well, I remember that Teddy Fitzgerald was one of the older men when I came in there, Bobby McCormick, and they used to tell that it was only a short, not too many years before that, when the post office was in politics, and your job wasn't safe with the change of politics, even in the postal service. And I might say that we were so thoroughly instructed, and we had to travel a week or two with a carrier to get wise to the proper way to handle mail, and we were not paid for that. And we were only paid for the days we worked. And sometimes some fellows really had to give up because they couldn't stand, if they were married men or family men, they couldn't get enough hours in to support the family. And but today they get paid and they know anything. Right, they start right in, you know. And they get more per hour than we ever thought that would be possible in a post office. So those are some of the changes. I remember that during the Depression, that's one reason I always stayed at the post office. We lost a little time, but I just had a little cutting on our hours. The post office was always a place where if you behaved yourself, done your work right, you knew you was going to have a payday. And that was more than a lot of factories could do years ago. I recall when I was laid off when I worked down in a motor plant in October, and I didn't get back till April. They didn't, the auto plants didn't run the year round. You know, they're always subject to layoffs. And of course, as far as about carrying mail, I always enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting the public, and I had very little trouble with anybody. Even if they did worry me sometimes about letters, I never did show up. And
having trouble with dogs.
Dogs, I had 5 times I was bitten, but they weren't. The one was quite bad. It come right along here somewhere. It ran in a Christmas rush, and gee, I would have taken a day or two off, but we're in the rush. Christmas rush was different years ago. We stood under the streetlights and fumbled our letters for the whole block, and then went along and delivered them. We didn't get through with daylight and dark, then we kept right on going. And, I don't know, it was a lot of difference. I recall our foreman, the brewer, George Brewer, Bill Foley, they used to tell us, "You deliver every letter you have. You never know what a letter contains. It might be a letter of some misfortune in some family. It might be some financial thing that somebody's concerned with. And if you didn't deliver them, they had the right to send them out special delivery if you come back with any first-class letter in your bag, and they could charge it to you if they wanted it." Hmm. And in that regard, I think I got a little something. I don't know if it's right here or not. Yeah, this was read one time at a convention. We are, this is what we were taught, and as we felt them days. Mm-hmm. "We still are the messenger of sympathy and love, servant of the parted friends, consoler of the lonely, bond of the scattered families, enlarger of the common life, peer of news and knowledge, instrument of trade and industry, promoter of mutual acquaintance, of peace and goodwill among men and nations." That's why, and the letter carrier was the only government employee that you see every day. And you come to your porch and your home, and you got to know him better than any other government employee. Mm-hmm. And there was at one time I gave a little talk on that at our old time brotherhood. And I couldn't help but tell him, I made the remark, I said, I had my jacket on and my cap. I said, "Do you appreciate when this man comes up on your porch, or would you like to sick the dog on him?" He said, "It's our duty to be friendly and kind to everyone. It's part of our job. And that's why we're in the number on our cap. We don't even have to know our name. You can just put in my number and call it the post office. You never knew what a letter contained. And it might not be important to you, but to somebody else, it's very important. And that's the way we were trained.
Well, I think they feel that way sort of now, though, don't you? I mean, they can't go back to post up with letters.
I shouldn't. This isn't going on the tape.
Yeah.
No, this particular thing I don't want on the tape.
Oh, okay, just a minute.
The term was mailmen.
Now men, right, now women.
Right. And well, today, of course, we have male ladies. And I personally, I can't understand how they stand to carry male with the type of shoes they wear.
Even the name is contradicting, male lady.
And we always wore a heavy sole and laced-up shoes. You'd see me wear them sometimes yet.
Yeah.
Because it supported your ankle when you had that heavy load on your shoulder. Of course, I don't think too many of these women are going to stay or intend to stay with the post office. It's good pay today, which is and perhaps they're going to work till they get the house paid for or a car paid for or something, which we don't exactly like to see, because they're not going to work till retirement.
Right.
And where are we going to get our retired people from in our organizations? I have nothing against it. I don't blame a woman that wants to help her husband to go over there and work it 4 or 5 years or so and get good insurance, and she'll also get a certain percentage of a pension. So there's a number of, I think a number of our boys that work in the post office have their wives there. Why not?
It's just a lot different than when we started out.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe it's for the, I've seen some male ladies that are wonderful, doing a real good job. But I don't think that they will be able to stand the gaff of the hard work, carrying the load on their shoulder. I even walk crooked yet. And I would say that it's not there, they haven't got the ability. They're probably smarter than some of the men that are carrying me. But I don't think that the women will stand it for like 30 years, 34 years and a half I had. And then the postmaster scolded me for retiring.
Yeah.
I said, Bill, I give you 4 years more than I need to get a pension. Yes, he says, Carl, but where do we pick them up now?
Yeah.
That was Billy. What was his name? I can't remember how he was. So, and if I had been clerking, I think I would have stayed on a while, on the dry floors and inside work. But I was getting afraid of a broken hip or a broken leg on the icy conditions. And while I had him 4 years more than I needed for a pension, why should I take a chance? And I would get, I don't know just exactly how much of my pensions without working.
Yeah.
So why should I stay on working and take a chance on being crippled than for my old days, for which I think I'm pretty happy now that I'm in my 12th year of retirement.
Exactly. Well, let me switch this.